Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vachamani Nira Vishesha Sunyavari Vaschachare Sadhani Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 36, the slaying of Arista, the bull demon, and the texts are 31 through 37. Yes. So we'll chant together text number 31, and then I'd like to just read the translations of 31 through 37. The translations of these verses has a nice flow together, and so I thought that the effect that these verses can have on our instruction today would be better if they're read straight through in the English without me trying to break it up with the Sanskrit. So, text number 31, word meanings, Nishrista, sent, Kila, indeed, May, my, Mrityu, death, Devai, by the demigods, Vaikuntha, of Lord Vishnu, Samsrayai, who take shelter, Tao, the two of them, Anaya, bring, Sama, together with Gopai, the coward men, Nanda Adyai, headed by Nanda, Sa, with Abhyutpayanai, gifts. Nishrista kila me mrityu.
Nishrista kila me mrityu.
Devai Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Devai Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Tau anaya sama gopair. Nandayai supyupayanai. Nishrista kila me mrityu.
Nishrista kila me mrityu.
Devai Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Devai Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Tavanaya sammam gopair.
Tavanaya sammam gopair.
Nandayai sabhyupayanai.
Nandayai sabhyupayanai.
Nishrita kila me mrityu.
Nishrita kila me mrityu.
Devair Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Devair Vaikuntha samsrayai.
Tav anaya samam gopair.
Tav anaya samam gopair.
Nandaya sabhyupayanai.
Bye.
Ladies. Anyone else? Okay, so I'm going to read through the translations of text 31 through 37. And as I do this, a lot of the information that's here was covered in the verses that Nagaraj Prabhu did yesterday. But it's not the information that we're reading for. It's the sort of the emotional impact of the words. Because what we find here is that Kamsa is talking about his plans. He's talking about his plans. Now, he's already made the plans, and they're already laid out in the verses we read yesterday. So why is he repeating them here? Well, he's repeating them. It's almost for dramatic effect of the Leela. But he's repeating them to bolster his demoniac ego. So I think that we need to listen for that. Listen for his demoniac ego as we read through these translations. The demigods who are under the protection of Vishnu have sent these two boys as my death. Bring them here. And also have Nanda and the other coward men come with gifts of tribute. After you bring Krishna and Balaram, I will have them killed by my elephant, who is as powerful as death itself. And if by chance they escape from him, I will have them killed by my wrestlers, who are as strong as lightning. When these two have been killed, I will kill Vasudev and all the lamenting relatives of Rishnis, Bojas, and Dasaras. I will also kill my old father, Ugrasena, who is greedy for my kingdom, and I will kill his brother, Devaka, and all my other enemies as well. Then, my friend, this earth will be free of thorns. My elder relative, Jarasandha, and my dear friend, Devita, are solid well-wishers of mine, as are Sambhara, Naraka, and Bana. I will use them to kill off all the kings who are allied with the demigods, and then I will rule the earth. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulences of the Yadu's capital. That is the ego, demoniac ego, of Kamsa speaking. When I read those verses, it brings to mind another section of verses from Bhagavad Gita that also read very well together in conveying the point of a demoniac person. And that's Bhagavad Gita 16, chapter 16, verses 13 through 15. So I want to read those two, and you can see, I think, the correlation between this type of thinking that Kamsa just spoke of. The Bhagavad Gita says, the demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and I will increase it in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. I think both of those passages work very well together. And it's interesting that one is Leela. One is Leela. We're reading about the Leela of Krishna and Kamsa speaking this way. So that's Leela. But Bhagavad Gita is more philosophical, so it's Siddhanta, more a statement of tattva, but both reflect the same thing. So Leela, the Lord's Leela, and the Siddhanta, or the philosophy, they're the same. And we can see them. When we read the Leela, we should be able to understand and see the Siddhanta in the activities that are taking place. Of course, it's very pronounced here, and maybe not so visible elsewhere, but we should try to see like this, because ultimately Leela and Siddhanta are the same. They don't reflect two different truths. They're just different ways of understanding the truth. And that's important for us, in that when we try to interact with others, especially the non-devotees, and to try to carry Krishna's message to them, we have various things in our arsenal which we can use to try to convince them. Most often it's going to be the Siddhanta, or the philosophy, because the Leela is sometimes a little esoteric for people. But Leela can be used in ways which are very effective, particularly in the form of drama. When I was in Mayapur just a couple of weeks ago, Bhakti Mark Swami, who's famous for his plays, he did a play, and I think he did it here. You may be familiar with it. It was called Gita Concise. You've seen that one, Gita Concise? Now, it was a very wonderful production, and it was Leela, it was drama. But all the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, he was able to pack in that play, which has only lasted about, 20 minutes, a half hour, or something like that. It was very wonderful and very powerfully effective. Very powerfully effective. So Leela can be used, but most often we're going to be speaking to people, Siddhanta, to try to convince them that they should take the spiritual life. And as Nagaraj Prabhu made the point yesterday in class, it's not that the truths, especially these basic truths, like this kind of a demonic nature that's described in these verses today, it's true that most people can understand that, they can relate to that, they can see it. It's not a big mystery when you think about a demonic king like Kamsa making these statements, because in reality, that's one of the comments that was mentioned in the one purport in these verses. It says here that even today there are wicked political leaders throughout the world who make such plans and even carry them out. So people understand these things because they see it. Yes, even today do that. And literature throughout the centuries has also contained many things, similar kind of actions. In that play, I think it's Shakespeare's play, Oedipus Rex. He imprisons his father, you know, and he does all kinds of other immoral things. And so in literature, it's reflected that, you know, these things happen, this mentality happens. So people, when we preach to them, they can understand these things, and therefore it helps us to give them a solution. They can relate to the problem, because everyone experiences the problem. But we have the solution. So we give them, we relate to them by giving them the problem, a common problem we experience, but then we give them a solution of Krishna consciousness. And as I say, that can be done through Leela or Siddhanta, but probably more often it's going to be with the Siddhanta, or the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So when we think about these words, since this class is directed to us and helping us advance in our own spiritual lives, when we think about these words, either the ones in Bhagavad Gita or Kamsas, we tend to think of them as a little distant from ourselves. But the question is, how distant are they, or how much do they really reflect our own consciousness as we try to advance? I think that they're probably a little closer than we might want to admit. we have this kind of idea. And it came up at the end of class yesterday about quota, our quota. And Adidevu was asking Nagaraj about when do we know that, you know, what? How do we know what is our quota, or when do we cross over the line into over-endeavor beyond what's our quota? This has to do with this kind of mentality, you know, how we determine that line and whether we go over it or stay away from it is directly related to this type of overlording mentality that we read and we see in the life of Kamsa. There are different ways that, you know, we can look at this. One is in terms of making plans. Now, Kamsa made plans here. As I said at the beginning, he already planned to have Kudavapita waiting at the gate because he told the elephant tender to bring him there. He already talked to Chanur and Mustika, the wrestlers, and told them to be prepared. He made his plan. And now he's repeating his plan and bolstering his ego by doing that, by boasting to Akura, who he's sending to Vrindavan. So this idea of plan making is one aspect of how we cross that line ourselves into going beyond what is our quota and accepting our position in life, is this idea of plan making. In literature, there's an interesting parallel here that people can relate to. So if we're preaching to them, we can talk about this idea of plan making. I'm sure everyone's heard that the phrase, "the best laid plans of mice and men." Familiar with that phrase? Well, it's actually the best laid schemes of mice and men. And it comes from a 1786 poem written by Robert Burns. And he wrote it to a mouse. And it's interesting how he ended up writing this poem to a mouse. Because apparently he was plowing a field, and he upturned a mouse's nest. And he ruined the mouse's plan by plowing in and destroying the mouse's nest. And so that gave him a realization. And so he wrote this poem where he says, "But mousey, thou art no thy lane," in other words, you're not alone, "in providing foresight may be in vain. The best laid schemes, O mice and men, gang aft gaily," means often go awry, "and leave us naught but grief and pain for promised joy." So this idea of plan making is what we see Kamsa doing, and it's how we as individuals often sort of try to plan our lives and not be content and try to understand what is our quota and often step over the line in our quota and trying to control our situation. It's a symptom of demonic nature. This idea of plan making. Now, of course, it's not that we don't make plans to spread Krishna consciousness or plan things that necessarily have to be done. We do that, but the point I'm trying to make is that we have to put some perspective on that plan making, because if we don't, we can easily cross over the line. And we can start thinking just like Kamsa, that wait a minute, you know, by my plans, everything is going to happen. I'm going to do this. This person is going to cooperate with me. And if they don't, then I'm going to get rid of them. And they're not going to stand in my way. this is quite common in the world we live in. And we dress it up in ways in which we think it's prestigious and nice, just like in the Ivy Leagues. It's all prestigious and nice. Harvard, well, these ivory-covered buildings and everything's tradition and staid and proper. But actually, what's going on there? I have a section of an article from the Harvard Business Review. The Harvard Business Review. And it's called The New Language of Competition. Are you friend or fro? Now, when Prahlad Maharaj was going to school, Sundanamarca, they taught him what? Friends and enemies. They taught him the science of friends and enemies. There was a demonic, they were teaching him demonic life by making determination between friends and enemies. Now, Harvard Business School, as much as they don't like to think of themselves as Sundanamarca and Hiranyakasipu and all that, essentially they are the same, but they've taken another step. Because not only do they teach in business friend and fro, but now they've come up with a new thing, which friend and foe. Now they've come up with a new thing called fros and frenemies. It's right here. Now, what is a fro and what is a frenemy? Well, they've understood that now in the world of business, it's not enough that you have friends and enemies, foes and enemies, because your foe is often your business partner. So now you have to distinguish between, with one entity, your business partner, whether they're a fro, means a friend and an enemy, or a frenemy. Let me see if I can find these. I didn't have time to highlight this, but they friends. Okay, the business partners nowadays are often both friends and foes, so they're called fros. And they're also both friends and enemies, called frenemies. So, I mean, the world is becoming more and more broken down and scientific, but it's all just this evil plan making that's described by this mentality of Kamsa and in the Bhagavad Gita. This is not how a devotee thinks. This is not how a devotee thinks. A devotee thinks completely different than this. And what I want to do to prove that to you is to have you consider something from the life of Srivas Pandit. How Srivas Pandit lived his life as compared to how we read about Kamsa. It's much different. This is a bit lengthy, but please stay with me because I think it's Chaitanya Leela, Lord Gaurapaneem's coming up, and so it's good. Plus, it's on the point here. One day, the Lord called Srivas Pandit and asked him confidentially about some family matters. The Lord said, "I see you never go anywhere. How will you manage to make ends meet in the family, and how are you doing so presently?" Srivas Pandit replied, "My Lord, I have not the heart to go anywhere." The Lord gently prodded the subject further, asking, "You have a large family to maintain. How then will you look after them?" Srivas Pandit said, "Certainly, whatever is my destiny will come as provisions. Each person receives his due. He will surely find whatever providence provides. We shall manage with whatever comes our way." Hearing this, the Lord said, "Then with this mentality, Srivas, take sannyas." Srivas replied, "That is not possible for me." The Lord said, "On one hand, you refuse to beg alms as a sannyasi. On the other hand, you do not make an effort for your livelihood or even collect food door to door. How do you plan to maintain your family? I am unable to understand you. Nowadays, if one does not make the effort of going hither and thither, then nothing will come of its own. Under the circumstances, please tell me what you propose to do." Srivas Pandit said, clapping his hands thrice, "Here is my explanation. 1, 2, 3. The Lord insisted, "Kindly clarify why you have clapped your hands thrice. What does 1, 2, 3 imply?" Srivas Pandit replied calmly, "I have taken a solemn vow that if after fasting for 3 days I do not get a morsel of food by its own accord, then I will surely tie a stone around my neck and throw myself in the Ganges to drown." This is a devotee's mentality. I mean, this is how a devotee thinks. I mean, none of the arrogance that Hirani Kashipu displayed, and a completely dependent on the will of the Lord, completely dependent upon the will of the Lord. So this continues just a little bit more. As soon as the Lord heard these words, he roared like thunder and said, "What did you say, Srivas Pandit? You may fast due to lack of food. By some rare chance, even Lakshmi Devi may have to go begging, but your family will undoubtedly never experience poverty. Srivas Pandit, have you already forgotten what I have said in the Bhagavad Gita 9:22? Those who worship me with devotion, meditating upon my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. Those devotees who are fixed in undeviating meditation upon me have never to beg at the doorstep of anyone. All the mystic potencies automatically manifest in them. Even when the personified four Vedic goals of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha come knocking at their doors, my servitors turn down such offers. My devotees are fully protected by my Sudarshan disc at all times, and even at the time of the total annihilation of this material universe, they remain completely transcendental and unaffected." How much do we believe that? That's why I say, is our mentality closer to what we read about Kamsa, or is it closer to Srivas? How much do we believe this? How much do we have that faith? I mean, it's a rhetorical question. I don't expect anybody to say, "Well, I do or I don't." But I think it's something we have to ask ourselves when we're trying to answer this question that came up, what Adi Dave asked yesterday. Well, how do we know what is our quota? That's going to be different for everybody. The quota is going to be different for everybody, and how we get to the understanding of the quota is also going to be different. Require an individual meditation of all of us. So there's not a set formula that can be there, although it was mentioned by Nagaraj, the perennial dilemma for all of us, that Prabhupada said that Grihastha should give 50%. That's a perennial dilemma. I don't think that Rohini Nandana's article that was written back in the 80s is the end of the story in that regard. But it does involve this type of soul searching. How close are we to Kamsa's words, or how close are we to Srivas Pandit's example? That we need to do. Of course, all of this is not come automatically. It comes through cultivation of devotional service, and how we cultivate this dependent attitude on the Supreme Lord and His mercy depends on knowledge and humility. That's part of our process of devotional service, to cultivate these things, knowledge and humility. The more we cultivate knowledge of how actually we live, how we're dependent upon the Lord, and how the Lord is faithful, we can place our faith in Him that He doesn't neglect us, that He does provide for our needs. That's something that comes, faith in that comes through the cultivation of knowledge and humility. This is why we receive instruction on things such as the brahmachari, living in the place of the guru. The brahmachari doesn't automatically think that I can go and take prasadam. You know, he has to be called. And what happens if he's not called? What is he supposed to do? He's supposed to fast. Wow. I mean, he's supposed to fast if he's not called. And this is training. This is training meant to help us come to this understanding of how we're dependent. Many of the activities that we do in devotional service, especially that we did in our Brahmachari, Brahmachrini days, for those of us who went through those years ago, they're meant to come to this point of creating humility and knowledge. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a very brilliant scholar come to his Gaudiya Math to join. And does anybody know what service Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur gave him? Well, similar to potwash. He told him to go work in the goshala. You know? Go work in the goshala. His man was like insulted. You know, I'm a big scholar. You're sending me to the goshala? He sent him there to cultivate humility, you know, so his knowledge could be true knowledge rather than just something that's on the basis of false prestige. And so we have to cultivate these things, knowledge and humility, and then we'll be able to move towards Srivas Pandit's example and away from this demonic mentality. Even we give it to that name, demonic mentality, we tend to soften it when we see the world around us, as I said, you know, Harvard or Ivy League schools or various niceties of the business world. But everyone there knows it's a dog-eat-dog world, and that has nothing to do with any understanding of Krishna consciousness that they may have. But they can't understand that there's fierce competition and it requires to be very aggressive and demonic to be successful in this world. That means we're living in a demonic place. And we have to change that and not think of it as in a nice way, but see it for what it is in the naked truth and cultivate the type of attitude, humble devotional attitude that we see in the life of Srivas Pandit and the other devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So these are some thoughts on these verses today. Are there any comments or questions? Yes, Vaga?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So thanks again for a good class, excellent class. I'm wondering, before you took your wife, were you in brahmachari? Did you have a period of life as brahmachari?
Yes. 9 years I was a brahmachari.
Okay. Thank you.
Jayadvaita Swami has a famous one-line quip, since he's here. I don't know if he's listening, but somebody asked about brahmachari life. Oh, but about the fact that some people take the vow of being brahmachari for just one day. You know, they take a vow of them. And so Jayadvaita Swami said about that, it's the best day of his life. So no other points? Thank you.